Welcome to the European CME Forum podcast. European CME Forum is a not-for-profit organization that promotes multi-channel discussion on matters relating to European and global CME CPD. My name is Eugene Pozniak. I'm the program director of European CME Forum. In this episode, I'm joined by Ron Murray, an independent CME CPD consultant and author of the recent JECME article on the 13th annual European CME Forum. The focus of today's episode is the 14th annual European CME Forum, which is being held virtually this November. Welcome back, Ron. Hi, it's good to see you again. How have you been?
I've been well, thanks, Eugene, since we last spoke, where we were discussing last year's European CME Forum, and now we've got an opportunity to talk about what's happening this year, and it's not too far away, just in November. So we know that this has been going on now, what, since 2008, something like that? So perhaps you can let the listeners know where and when is 14 ECF?
Sure. Yeah. So we are going to be virtual again. We were hoping to do it hybrid, and just like many other organizations, we've had to pull back on that. We will have a slight hybrid approach in that we will create a central studio, but you know, to join the meeting, it'll be virtual, and we're looking to design it in such a way that it'll just be more interesting visually, as well as using even further sort of newer collaboration technology from our partners Crystal. So we are hoping that this sort of computer experience will be enhanced in some way as well.
So are you going to keep Barcelona up your sleeve for future meetings then?
Yeah, we usually keep it quiet till the meeting itself. But actually, I'm so pleased that last week we had a very good discussion with the venue, and they've allowed us to hold on to the deposit and to have 15 ECF in Barcelona. So we can actually confirm that will be 2nd to 4th of November 2022. But Barcelona, you know, everything going well, we will be able to look forward to meeting there in person.
Fantastic. I'll put it into my diary straight away. Yeah. So last time we spoke, we mentioned the idea that each year you've got a theme to the meeting, and it would be good to know what your theme is for this year and how did you actually come to decide on this theme?
Sure. It was sort of looking at the outcomes of 13 ECF and the way we approached all the topics by stakeholder group. You know, we had the accreditors, had their own sort of plenary session, the industry, the drug company supporters had their own session that they controlled, the professional providers had theirs, you know, through the Good CME Practice Group, and the medical societies as well had sort of their session that they drove the agendas. It was great to have the interactivity and the discussions there. And we're thinking of turning it upside down, inside out, and saying, well, like we talked last time about the interprofessional education and groups, why don't we approach a series of topics with a multidisciplinary and interprofessional collection of people? And we then looked at the themes. We came upon the sort of three-legged stool. Three-legged stool is used in so many different ways, but it was quite natural to look at CME and think, well, you know, what are the three key aspects that make CME so stable and work? And, you know, we need the rules and regulations around it. You know, what's the formality around CME? Then we need to design the education appropriately. So there's a section on educational design and outcomes, looking at the effectiveness of it. And then, of course, how it's funded. And within funding, we've got to talk about independence and who are the players who can control certain things. And these we saw as being the three linchpins of CME. And really, all three have to work and be stable and organized in order for CME to work. So that's why I was sort of thinking, how do we achieve this balance? And we'll have a session dedicated to each of these themes. There will be overlap, of course. This is not perfect. It's not some kind of internationally recognized sort of definition. And some topics will need a bit more time than others, so we'll allow some spillover. But each of the sessions will be split into two parts. There'll be an introductory part where we will hear about, let's say, the rules and regulations, or best practice in educational design and outcomes, or what's current practices in funding and independence, but from each of our stakeholder groups, not just from the people who come up with the rules or who come up with the funding. We'd like to hear the opinions of the other stakeholders directly relevant to that topic. And then the second part of the plenary session will be a roundtable discussion where all four of the stakeholders are around the table, and we'll also bring in other people, such as a learner, maybe related voices. And because we're a virtual meeting, we can beam people in and out as needed. We don't have to have a giant table on the stage. So this is one of the benefits of being virtual. We can have a free-flowing discussion, which we'll bring to the audience in, we hope, in a very well-produced, you know, high-quality production.
So have you got a graphic designer then working on a milkmaid stool or something for your logo?
That's a good idea, Ron. How are you with the pencil and paper?
I think I could come up with something, but we'll see. Okay. So you've talked about stakeholders there, Eugene, and you mentioned some of those stakeholders, but, you know, who really is your target audience among those stakeholders? Are you talking about the top level of representatives from stakeholders, or are you talking about the person at the coalface who's doing the grunt work?
That's really interesting. Actually, it's something we've been thinking about for years and years as well. What level of people do we want to get involved? But I think the majority of the time, you know, for faculty, we do need the decision makers, the policy makers. So they're the senior people who can actually comment, you know, knowledgeably and with authority on each of these topics. But also, you know, ordinary practitioners, but, you know, the everyday practitioners who have to live by these rules, by these constraints, let's say, because it's the people on the ground who actually understand, you know, where things are going right, where things may need looking at. So the faculty is mixed up across these people. But something that we, right from the very first CME forum, that we thought carefully about is about how senior can faculty come from and what are our objectives as a meeting. You know, our primary objective is that people who come to the meeting do not leave with any questions still ringing in their heads. So, you know, all the presentations are focused towards that. And they're not necessarily there to be entertained or to hear a good story of something that's happened. You know, we really want to make this as relevant to people's practice. So whatever, you know, the target audience of the meeting work in, now there should be tidbits of information they can take away and implement in their work, whoever they work for, you know, straight after the meeting. And that's actually driven, just as a slight aside, you know, we've only once paid for a speaker in 14 CME forums. And that was in our very first meeting. We actually paid Phil Hammond to be an after dinner speaker. So if you're not from the UK, Phil Hammond is a doctor who turned stand-up comedian about 10 years ago. And he's a commentator on healthcare issues in the UK. He's just published a book. He writes.
I've just been reading Phil Hammond's column in Private Eye, actually,
mm-hmm.
where he doesn't give his name. But yes, I know who you mean.
Yeah.
You've given some ideas there about the breadth of scope of who might represent you as faculty. What about actual attendees, the learners? I know in the past we've had medical students attend and present, actually. But I wonder if, because you're now going virtual, is that an opportunity to allow someone who may be kind of regarded as more in an administrative role than a managerial role to participate?
Yeah, we've certainly had that in the past as well. So for attendees, so this is really for anyone with an interest in European or global CME CPD. We usually have, of course, it's the people working in CME CPD who make up the largest sector. So about 40% of our delegates come from, you know, medical education companies, CME providers. Then we have usually 10 to 15% from medical societies and associations, not just from Europe, but also national societies from the US as well, Canada. Then separately, medical organizations, whether they're sort of the Royal Colleges or Chambers of Physicians representing the healthcare profession. We usually have a few from there. Of course, the accreditation bodies are present in good numbers as well. And educators, and of course, industry. So whether it's pharma or med tech, we usually have very good attendance from industry, both as faculty and attendees, to really get a sense of what's happening in Europe and around the world, and whether they're from a senior role from the grants offices, but also members of staff, to really get a sense of how the CME community is discussing education, how it's funded. And the other attendees, as you've already mentioned, yeah, we have medical students who've presented and attended, patients, patient advocacy groups. This is really important to have the patient voice at the meeting, which we've been focusing on for the past few years. And whether it's medical publishers, the medcoms agencies, meeting organizers, anyone sort of on the support side of the CME industry also find it useful to attend the meeting.
Well, let me ask you something else. So, because as you know, I worked in CME CPD in the USA for more than 20 years. And you mentioned there that there are attendees from the US and Canada. So I'm wondering, for it coming to a European meeting, what's the benefit to those people who are arriving from North America? What are they getting out of this?
Sure. It's usually people who have some kind of interest in Europe. So whether they have European learners going to their educational activities in the US or engaging virtually, or they're looking to expand to Europe. It's a natural move to go from North America to a largely English speaking, you know, if you do medical education in Europe, it's primarily English speaking on the international level. So it's that natural next step. So we do have a lot of interest going that way. And there is a lot of sort of across transatlantic sharing of ideas. So even the medical associations are working together. They usually have their transatlantic cousins that they work in collaboration with in some way. But also the accreditation standards. You know, a lot of Europe look over to North America, especially to the US, see what's happening. And vice versa, because, you know, the world is getting smaller. We are a global economy, and medical education is now so internationalized. There's a lot that we can learn from each other.
Well, I know that in the past, you've had representatives of some of the organizations in the US and Canada, like the Royal Colleges there, and people like the past presidents of the Alliance for Continuing Education in the Health Professions. Is that something that you're hoping to continue to have their input into the meeting, into the forum?
Absolutely, yes. I'm really keen to continue the collaborations that we've had in recent years, certainly with the ACCME, the Alliance. The Alliance runs a workshop every year with the Royal College in Canada, the International Academy of CPD accreditation as well. So it's not usually the organizations, but it's usually through the individuals of those organizations who come and share their experiences, best practices, and also to sort of have an idea of what's going on sort of more globally by, you know, coming to Europe. Okay, we're virtual, but having that European feel and to air their concepts and ideas, or just to expand on their work.
So does the same principle apply to other parts of the world, like Asia, Latin America, so on?
Yeah, we usually have good attendance from Asia, Latin America, the Middle East, usually someone even further afield, like from Australia, just because, yeah, if we look at sort of global CME, if we see that North America is really sort of leading the way just by virtue of having formalized systems for decades longer than anywhere else, and then Europe following. So other countries around the world then look to these two areas, and Europe, perhaps from a European perspective, we could come up with scenarios that are closer to their own experiences, because there's certainly countries in Europe still that don't have formal CME systems or are struggling with the same challenges that the other countries face. So there seems to be, you know, a good sharing of ideas, and they certainly find attending CME forums of great benefit to them.
So is there a way then, do you think, for marketing the forum to make people realize that it's not just about the CME CPD that occurs in Europe, but what does go on there may be applicable other places, and that the folks who are attending from other places can contribute to it and maybe enhance the activities that go on in Europe?
Yeah, no, that's true. And it's a fine balance that we try and achieve, is to say that, you know, if you want to hear the latest cutting edge information about CME in Europe, this is the place to come, but also to be as inclusive as possible and not to exclude people who think, oh, that's not for us. And that's why we share so much of our content. You know, you go to cmeforum.org, you can find information about all our past meetings. And really, that's probably the best way people can actually get a feel for what we do, as well as following us on our social media channels, you know, whether it's Twitter or LinkedIn. Yeah, the kind of people who come to the meeting, I think, are people who return. I mean, well over 50% of people are returning delegates.
In our last discussion, we talked about what happened in your first virtual activity at the 13th CME Forum. So what do you see as what you maybe have learned from the 13th one that you're going to incorporate in the 14th? Or, you know, have you made significant differences into the setup? And, you know, you said that you've got lots of returning delegates. Are they going to be, is it going to be same again, or is there some dramatic differences for them to look forward to?
So a year on, really, in our COVID times and people getting familiar with online technology, whereas it was all still quite new to people last November, we are much more digitally competent now as a society. And the platforms we will be using, because we'll be using two platforms this year, will be using the next generation jam that we had last year, which allows for much more interactivity and collaboration on screen in a high quality format. On top of that, we'll also use a networking platform, and we're working out the final details now, and we're actually designing it at the moment. So it's a place where people can go informally. It's like last year we had cmesummit.org, which was the meeting book. And then we used Zoom technology as well for some of the workshops. So we're just designing a platform which is based on the background of Zoom, where people can also go and get the meeting materials they need, view the videos such as the elevator pitches or any supporting author videos from the JECME authors, or poster authors. That's where you could be able to download the posters, have interactive poster sessions, as well as networking opportunities. And on that platform as well, we will have the day zero meetings. So actually that's something we will reintroduce this year. We did miss it last year. It's just sort of thinking, you know, last year we were virtual. Yeah, we were on sort of like a Zoom on steroids kind of environment. It was fantastic for the time, but we've moved on a year now. And I think to keep us engaged and learning keep us engaged and learning, we need to offer something more as a meeting. So through these two platforms, where people will be able to talk to each other, will be able to engage, ask their questions that they want answered, we're hoping for an enhanced experience for the delegates.
Well, moving on a year as well, and mentioning the Journal of European CME, last time we talked about the the call for articles and papers for a special collection, and I know that's happening this year as well. Perhaps, you know, you could expand on what the topics are for this year, and if you're going to do something similar to last year and actually do some interviews or something like that during 14 ECF.
Yes, that proved really successful last year, to actually select a few of the authors to be to have a conversation with the guest editors. Really worked very well. And even during the meeting, while we were having these author interviews, we were getting feedback of people saying, this would be really nice to have across all the authors. So in the end, JECME, we invited all the authors of their papers selected for the special collection to actually give videos. You know, they're available on the JECME.org website as well. So this year with the special collection, the topic is about digitization of continuing education in the health professions.
Very topical.
Uh-huh, indeed. We have two guest editors. We have Peter Henning, who is sort of professor and director of the Institute for Computers in Education at Karlsruhe University. So he was a speaker a few years back at a European CME forum.
Yeah, I remember Peter, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's not directly involved in CME itself. However, a lot of his work is looking at how healthcare professionals are educated online, and his main thing is actual online education in whatever sector. And Reinhard Griebenow, who is a cardiologist and also chair of the European Cardiology Section Foundation, of course, you know, head of EBAC for years as the accreditor, to sort of bring the medical side to the special collection. And they are really keen to accept any kind of paper that's well-designed, well-written, that highlights a particular challenge, issue, topic related to digitization of continuing education. So it's really very flexible. They actually asked the publisher if it was possible to accept any format as well, any format of paper. You know, it doesn't have to be a short communication like it was last year, you know, which was which follows a certain format for less than 2,000 words. This could even be a letter, or it could be a long paper. But they're just keen to showcase experiences that anyone has had about how they've digitized their education in the recent couple of years.
So if I wanted to submit an article, where would I go to get the information about how to do that?
The place to go is JECME.org. If you click on About, there is a link there with information for authors, and that helps guide authors in through the Taylor & Francis system, our publisher. And yeah, it's pretty straightforward. You set up a profile and you are guided as to how to upload your manuscript. And it automatically goes to the editors-in-chief, or if you're maybe not so experienced or you're not too sure about whether your publication would be suitable, on JECME.org, you've got the email links to the editors, and you can actually write to them directly and discuss your planned paper with them.
That's very helpful. Now, what if people wanted to get involved in another way? You know, presumably your planning is ongoing and you've got an idea of maybe not all of your faculty or presenters yet. Is there still an opportunity for people to actually participate in a presentation mode at 14 ECF?
Absolutely, yes. So on CME Forum, on the 14 ECF page, you'll be able to find some information there where we've got a call for abstracts, for poster presentations, as well as workshops. So we will be doing the posters in a similar way to last year, where we'll have the PDFs available online for everyone and also supported by a video presentation. So the deadline for the call for abstracts for posters is the 20th of September. So it's still a bit of time for that. And it's just an abstract at this stage. And being digital as well, you'll have time to be able to create your poster and the recordings. And also a call for abstracts for running a workshop. So after the first leg and the second leg of the meeting, we will run a number of parallel workshops, which people can apply for to run themselves. The deadline for the call for the abstracts for the workshops is 13th of September. But this is a time when we really have some very interesting applications for presentation. I mean, like, take a look at previous years, what kind of workshops have been run. But as long as it's to do with the theme of the meeting and you can describe how you will run an interactive session, none of our faculty are asked to give didactic presentations for long. But if you've got some kind of idea that can help support better CME in Europe or anywhere around the world, and you can demonstrate an interactive session, then our panel will consider this and we'll try and work it into the meeting.
Again, I think what you're talking about there is this, what I find refreshing about having been involved in this forum for a number of years now is this accessibility and transparency and providing opportunities for perhaps younger people who might be just embarking on their career and maybe even studying still and have got some work in hand. I know in the past you had a young woman from the Netherlands or Belgium, I can't remember which one it was, who was doing a PhD and presented some of her preliminary work, and she indeed has gone on to do some great stuff. So I think it's great that you're given the opportunity for not just the, if you like, the recognized leaders in the field, but really anyone who's got something appropriate and important to say.
Absolutely. Well, yes, absolutely, Ron. And that's very true. And it doesn't have to be activities that are accredited for CME. It's literally anything that can help improve the competence of clinicians, patient outcomes in any way. And yeah, we've had junior doctors, students, trainees. The wonderful example of the PhD work that was presented at the end of each of her years. But we had some outcomes work from a hospital in Kent, literally where he was a junior doctor, while doing the ward rounds, discovered a clinical need somewhere and proposed a solution. And it was a fantastic poster. And she gave the presentation last year. So yeah, it doesn't have to be accredited education, but anything that can help clinical practice, patient outcomes, or just educational techniques, digitization, then we are very happy to consider all applications.
And I remember that particular poster that you just mentioned there and how it was such a simple solution to the problem that was recognized. And, folk want to see specifically what it was, they can go to the details on the website. Absolutely. It's all recorded. So I know that, and I've participated quite recently, that you do a proper needs assessment by asking your audience what it is that is going to work for them. Now, it's by means of a survey that you do every year to really find out what people want. And you follow up even at the meeting itself by asking what people want to have answered their questions. And at the end of the meeting, you ask if the questions have been answered. So there really is a kind of soup to nuts approach on this one. So could you kind of give a bit more information about the survey that you put out and how it's used?
Sure, yeah. So we've been using SurveyMonkey since sort of SurveyMonkey became a thing. So it's about 7 years. And the survey is running right now. We'll put the link in the show notes so you can go directly to it. And to encourage people as well to take part, we put a discount code at the end. There's a 10% discount code from the registration fee as a thank you for taking part. And we usually have sort of 80 to 100 people each year sharing their opinions from around the world, not necessarily delegates or faculty, but just people involved in CME. And it just gives us a good insight into what people think are the important topics right now. And we have actually been analyzing this year on year to try and track any kinds of changes in opinions. But certainly for the pre-meeting survey, this really does inform what happens at the meeting. So we ask the faculty and the session leaders to, of course, look at the theme of the meeting, and then we will give them relevant feedback from the, actually we give out the full reports of the needs assessment beforehand, because it just gives a sense of what people out there are talking about.
Yeah, well, you mentioned one of my favorite words there, Eugene, which is discount. And I wonder if you could, you know, give people an idea, so it's not to be too blunt about it, but how much does it cost to go to 14 ECF?
Yeah, no, this is interesting because, you know, I think people now a year on have realized to run a virtual event is not free. It's not cheap. However, it's much less expensive than meeting on site live. But we've got Early Bird running at the moment, which is going on till the end of September, and including tax, €181.50. And then it goes up to sort of 242. So this is in keeping with a lot of meetings. And so certainly not as much as many. And clearly it's not free because we've got a lot of technology and costs to cover. But what we've introduced this year for the first time actually is a special rate for people from low and low to middle income economies as well, where they can have a 50% discount of the prevailing rate.
Well, that's encouraging indeed. So, and have you got any kind of ideas so far from this year's survey, your analysis of what are the themes that are coming out that people are really interested in?
No, the survey is always interesting year on year. It's about sort of the same number of people from Europe and North America who participate, and then maybe half as many from sort of rest of the world. And it's a really good split across the stakeholder groups. So we do get a good sense of what people are looking, because we ask a few questions. What would you like to know about? And the top answers actually, right from the beginning, which really affected the way that we plan the meetings, is that people want to know how to make education more engaging for the learner. What makes high quality education? And how to measure outcomes. So all these sort of questions around effective, good quality education comes way higher than, let's say, the rules and regulations or how to get something accredited or issues of who's controlling the content. So, you know, in recent years, that's where you would see a shift in our programming towards looking at educational design and, you know, sort of much more in the meeting. And things that it's interesting to note that right from the beginning, we did ask about the role of social media in education. And it always ended up right at the bottom, year after year. People aren't interested in Twitter. What's the point? But in the past, you know, last year and this year so far, this is now getting higher up. How are we finding out about education? How are we actually engaging in it? You know, it's becoming more important now as we're becoming more sort of discerning consumers of our digital world. So that's interesting. And then the survey also asks about what the respondents are worried about. And this is it's sort of interesting. I think we talked about it in the last podcast, Ron, you know, about the role of CME as an agent in sort of improving clinical practice. You know, how is it linked to the actual daily work of the healthcare professionals in their workplace? Now, this is year on year, this is a concern. And then, you know, the age-old discussion about recognition of CME credits across borders, which people talk about, but then usually in the meeting, once we start thinking about, you just realize, well, how important is that? You know, if you are a healthcare professional in one country, you know how to get your CME or CPD certificates. You don't need someone else to tell you about the global standards or international blah, blah, blah of how to use that piece of paper in your country. Yes, it helps if you go to a conference that you can use it, but usually the individual learner knows how to maintain that. So that always scores highly and then lower sort of after the event. But what's also interesting this time around is comments about faculty, in fact, and about digital competence, about presentations online. And this was a surprising thing that I just noticed last week when I dipped into the survey.
That's fascinating. But it was, funnily enough, it came up last year and it's as part of some of the presentations about the importance of making sure that you're doing appropriate faculty training for this the digital world, because there may be faculty members that are, you know, happy doing their slide decks and a big conference stage, but when it comes to engaging in this sort of format that we are doing now, but visually as well, they may not be quite as comfortable and feel that just, you know, they can wing it. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if any of the lessons learned from last year actually are implemented when we start to get this rolling in November.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. I'm hoping that our faculty listen to this podcast as well. I think because the lessons we learned from last year, you can always spot the faculty member who didn't come to the rehearsal, because they're the ones who don't know which button to press. They just go, oh, yeah, we know how to use it. Well, yeah, you might know how to use Zoom on your computer, in your configuration. However, it's really important to get together. And it's not just knowing which virtual buttons to press on your virtual screen. It's also how you're interacting with your colleagues, with your co-panelists, with the audience using that technology. And it's vitally important. And this is just way beyond technical capabilities of your own system. It's how you're going to run the meeting. And thinking about, you know, when we do the live meetings on site, we do have some kind of faculty rehearsal where people actually go into the space and have people talking to each other. And it might not necessarily be called a rehearsal or something, but just for the people to talk to each other so they can exchange a few ideas is really important. We need to recreate this virtually as well.
Yeah, I think the lessons learned from last year, you know, will be interesting to see. And presumably we won't mention any names, of course, but there might be some of the same presenters appearing this year that were there last year too.
I mean,
some differences.
Yeah.
So in terms of the moving towards November, which isn't very far away, remind us of how the up-to-date planning is going and how people can access that information.
Yeah, so the confirmed information always appears on the meeting website at cmeforum.org/14ECF. You just go to the homepage and get the information. We will be posting information on Twitter and LinkedIn as it's confirmed. So we usually release information once, let's say, whole sessions are planned, just to give people more of an idea of the detail that's going through. The faculty does work really hard with this meeting. And a lot of things are actually worked out to really make it as up to date as possible, and also for the faculty members to talk to each other. There is a lot of collaboration between people as they work out topics. We try and announce all the faculty on the website, so you can see that and the overall topics, so you can make your decision whether to come or not. I know a lot of people have already started registering to benefit from the early bird rate, and they know that. You know, roughly what to expect, but especially for the newcomer, I know you probably need a bit of sort of reassurance that it's a meeting that does what it says on the tin. So we do feed out a lot of information, but keeping up to date with our posts on LinkedIn, on Twitter is really important.
Well, I would definitely encourage everyone who has an interest in the global aspect of CMACPD and what's happening in Europe to make sure they register and attend. And I am really looking forward to it. So that'll probably be the next time I see you in person, Eugene.
Thanks very much, Ron. Thank you for our chat today. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
Take care.
That was Ron Murray, independent CME consultant, joining me to discuss the upcoming 14th annual European CME Forum. You can now register for the 14th annual meeting, and if you register before October, you will receive an early bird discount. We are currently accepting abstract submissions for posters and workshops. Applications for workshops will be accepted until Monday, 13th of September, and poster applications accepted until Monday, 20th of September. Registering for the 14th annual meeting will also give you access to the complete archive of the 13th annual European CME Forum, consisting of all the plenary and workshop sessions with over 18 hours of CME CPD content from a faculty of 70 experts in European and global CME. More information on the upcoming 14th annual European CME Forum and this year's JECME special collection can be found on our website, cmeforum.org. Thank you for listening, and join us for more episodes as we explore all things CME CPD.